Hello. This is Denise Nichols, substituting for Doug Roeke today on National Progressive Radio, Warrior Connection. And today we have an interesting show talking about a film that was made on women at war, on Gulf War veteran women. So we have a beautiful guest and dedicated guest, Christy Davis, and her husband, Dennis Davis, that put their skills together and put a documentary film together. Christy, are you there?
I'm here, Denise. Good to hear from you.
Well, we're going to just move right along in this conversation today. Christy, how did you first get involved in the Gulf War illness issue and then focusing on women?
Well, I was involved in the Gulf War illness issue back in the 90s. My husband and I filmed a short film called Friendly Fire. It was a scripted film with actors. And I became interested in Gulf War illnesses back then. And I was in the process of researching for a screenplay. And I went to the National Gulf War Resource Center convention in Las Vegas in 1999. And when I was there, I met you, Denise.
Yes,
I met Venus Hammack. And I was like amazed. The wonderful women that were in the war, and it kept going into my mind. Women were in this war, we didn't hear anything about them. What was their experience? What was it like? And that experience being at the National Gulf War Resource Center Convention was staying in my mind for quite a while. And then in 2002, and the NGWRC had another convention that was actually the first convention was in the fall of 2001, but was postponed because of 9/11 to May of 2002. And it was in Atlanta, Georgia. And I said to my husband, I said, well, he and I both have a video production company in Los Angeles. And I said, let's take our camera and go down to the convention and see if we could meet any women. We had no idea who was going to be there. We had no idea if we were going to meet anyone. So we took our cameras, got in, flew from Los Angeles to Atlanta, and they set us up in the press room there. And one of the first people we met was Denise. And she said, well, I have some women that you would like to talk to. So we just sat in there with our camera, and she brought women in. And she was interviewed herself, and my husband and I were blown away because the women that we filmed there were so articulate, so emotional, had so many experiences that they wanted to share on camera. We were completely blown away. And then I said to him, I said, we have a film here just because of the quality of the women. And since we had such wonderful interviews, we decided that the film would be from the point of view of the women themselves. We wouldn't have any narration. We wouldn't have any so-called experts from Washington or anybody. We would just have the women telling their own stories. And so that's how the film started. And a couple years later, we went to another National Gulf War Resource Center convention in St. Louis, and we met some additional women and videotaped some of the women that we had videotaped in Atlanta. And but we knew we couldn't really make a film out of just interviews. As marvelous they were, we would have to really get more involved with the women and their lives and see what would come up from there.
Yeah, I know that you started the first tape that you had that any of us saw was a lot of interviews with a lot of females, and I do hope you eventually put that up on YouTube, the portion that's not going to be on the DVD.
Yeah, that's our trailer. We will put that up. We have a website called womenatwarmovie.com, and you can see a trailer on womenatwarmovie.com.
And I know we had Julie Dykeman, who was the highest ranking, along with Colonel Herb Smith, that had spoken and testified. I don't remember if you got Debbie Judd before she died.
I spoke to her, yes, in 1999 in Las Vegas. Just a casual. Back in 1999, we were actually filming the conferences, and I got some informal interviews with Debbie Judd, which kind of, after she died, I went back and looked at that, and it's like, it's very powerful.
Yeah,
very
I would
sad.
Love to have that portion put on, you know, a YouTube, because Debbie would want us to have it out there.
Mm-hmm.
But we had Julia Dykeman and then Carol. And
Carol Williams.
Julia, uh-huh, both served together in Navy. And I know Carol became kind of our star to have one focus point. And we had Venus, who's been involved since the early beginnings. And then we had, who else?
Well, the four of you are really the main characters in the film. Denise, Carol Williams, Venus Hammack, and Julia Dykeman, because we interviewed a lot of people, but it's like if people would have to open up their lives, let us film them outside of the interviews.
Right.
And that made a difference for us to open up the film to show the personal life of the women and show them, you know, their day-to-day life, as well as some excursions we videotaped.
I know you took an excursion and came and met us in Miami when Dr. Klimas had told me she needed female Gulf War vets. And you interviewed all of them that came. I think we had five or six, including mm-hmm. Candy, and can't remember all the names right off the bat, but as we were going through the research program that Dr. Klimas had, and that's been several years back.
Yeah, and that was an incredible, I could find it was incredible that we would get permission to film in the VA and the research project, but they gave us full permission. So we've mainly focused on Carol, Denise, and Venus as they went through an extraordinary two-day research program, ending up with them riding these stationary bicycles, which is really one of the highlights of the film, of them riding these bikes.
Oh, God, don't remind me. I think we're all almost falling off. And
I know. It was, like, so intense. And and we've also followed Denise and Venus to Washington, D.C., where Denise and Venus went to the RAC, Research Advisory Committee meeting, and we filmed them. And they both spoke there to the panel, and we caught that. And the most interesting part was when we followed Venus and Denise up to Capitol Hill and following them around, doing what Denise does so incredibly well, is lobbying members of Congress, which is how anything gets done for veterans, is making sure that the money is there.
Yeah, I almost wanted y'all to come up there every trip because the camera pulls those congressmen in. They want to know what we're doing, and they came right over to us when they saw a camera. So it was kind of an interesting interaction there at the Hill and having the camera and seeing them approach us instead of us trying to approach them.
Yeah, it was, but I think I realized how much work that you go through and then the other veterans, Gulf War veterans who have to lobby on the Hill and having to go up there, you know, to make sure that there's Gulf War illness funding, research funding in the budget, and it's like, it's a tireless job, and we captured some of it on tape, but, I mean, that's a whole documentary itself, just covering that whole process.
So as you started tape, and then you had a lot of female interviews, and I think you put it out to a group of people in Los Angeles or to preview, and they kind of gave you the clue to zero in and zero down the group. Is that correct?
By looking at other documentaries, talking to other documentary filmmakers, I realized, you know, you can't have a documentary with 15 wonderful women in it because the people get confused, you know. They want to concentrate on a few women, like the four women we have, and then there are five other women who are kind of like supporting players,
right,
who present points of view and different experiences that the other people don't have, or it's mainly nine veterans that we've selected. And not to say that the other women weren't wonderful, it's just what was needed for the film. And of course, being able to follow the women around. One of the women, Carol Williams, she lives in Macon, Georgia, and we were able to follow her in a house. And she's very ill. She's in a wheelchair. She has multiple illnesses, and we were able to follow her around and follow her to the VA. And it's very difficult to film in a VA, but we were able to film her there, filmed her at home with her family. And I think it's very eye-opening, because one of Denise's quotes, or one of the many quotes that kind of highlight our film, is she said, "The war has been more of a war since we came home." And that was most evident to me filming this. Is these women are still at war. They're still fighting for treatment and benefits. Their war is not over.
So true. And did that open your eyes? I mean, how did you feel about veterans before you got involved with, you know, going to a Gulf War conference? I mean, what was your...
I was relatively sympathetic. My dad fought in World War II. My brother is a veteran. My husband Dennis is a veteran. So I've always was sympathetic. I just wasn't prepared for the fact that when you come home from war and you're a veteran for the rest of your life. If you're ill or you are injured, you are ill and injured. It affects the rest of your life, you know. And to me, I don't know, it was very hard to see women fighting for their health, trying to keep their families together, and the immense obstacles that the VA and the government puts up for treatment and benefits. That has really angered me.
Did you see that before you got involved with your family?
No, I didn't see that before, and I hope that that's one of the things that our film can show. It just the difficulties that, well, I'm focusing on these women, but the difficulty all veterans have, because to me, the VA system, you have it in Washington, D.C., and they're kind of like, they're centered on making everybody on the Hill happy and so they don't get a bad report. But all around the country, you've got Veterans Administration, some good, some bad, all throughout the country that veterans have to depend on to get benefits and to get treatment. And I think the amount of care that they get really varies from VA to VA. And one of the things that also struck me was that when servicemen and women come home, all of a sudden they don't have unemployment insurance, they don't have health care anymore that they had when they were in the military, and so they are virtually, that's the first like two or three years, if they get sick or they can't find a job, they become homeless. And the Gulf War veterans, a lot of them become sick, they lost their homes. It's like I just wish there was some sort of mechanism where soldiers coming home could have some sort of unemployment benefit insurance or some sort of health care that would automatically be there. They wouldn't have to go to the VA and try to get assistance. That was just an observation that I noticed.
What did you notice? I know you went with Carol to her VA that she uses.
Mm-hmm.
What were you able to see and observe there? What was your opinion?
Well, my opinion when I was there, we had a minder with us, a PR minder. So we couldn't talk too much on camera, but my belief is that people hoist themselves their own petard. We just let the camera run. And there's a segment in the film that you'll see about a VA employee there well, just encapsulates what you, the kind of hoops you have to go through as a veteran to get care at the VA. And it's really funny, like you talked about being on the Hill and the cameras come. Like Carol went there to just get a simple prescription for dermatology. And all the, she had to go through all these, this rigmarole and all these hoops. And then they finally said, well, you have to come back again. And she was several miles away from the VA to get the prescription. So she was very sad. So we get out of the car, and because she had a camera crew with her, they ran out from the VA and gave her a prescription just because they didn't want to look bad in front of the cameras. And so my feeling was I wish every veteran had a camera crew behind them because, as you noticed in D.C., that really makes a difference.
Yeah, it's almost like I want to get every independent filmmaker out there involved in some way. And even 20 years after the war, the story goes on. We still have veterans fighting for their compensation. And we talked earlier today that Carol finally pretty well got her compensation taken care of.
But she fought for many years, and she had to hire a lawyer.
Yeah.
Go before a VA judge. And most veterans, you know, especially if they're sick, they don't have the resources or the energy to keep fighting. I don't know. Don't get me started on the VA because a lot of my observations come from Carol when she tells me her experiences were the VA that she went to near Dublin. It's like a lot of the services of the VA aren't even performed there. They have contract out with other doctors, so you have trouble, you know, getting what you need because they don't even have doctors there on site. You have to get an outside doctor. In fact, Carol only got a diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia when she went outside the system and went to a private doctor who immediately diagnosed her, and that's the only way she got benefits. She would never got in if she, because they just gave her a runaround at the VA to try to even diagnose what she had.
I remember Carol having to go into the ER, and she had an episode, and her husband Stanley was asleep. I think the son was there, but she was having chest pains.
Mm-hmm.
And here she is organizing it, and she's having severe chest pains, and, you know, getting her records to take with her, her list of prescriptions, her list of diagnoses that she carries with her, and coordinating to do this while she's in the middle of having chest pains. And she could have died, but she didn't. You know,
I know that. I mean, that's it exactly. Is so I maybe if you go to a VA and you break your leg or something, or you have a you were in a current war and you had
a visible injury,
but the invisible injury, and you have multi-symptom injuries. Like Carol said. When I go to the doctor VA, they can't believe I have so many complaints. If nobody, you know, should have this many complaints. And they're all symptoms of Gulf War illness. And I don't think that the VA still has, when you go to the local VAs, unless you go to a really good VA, or unless they diagnose you with something that's within the medical establishment, like with multiple sclerosis or something like that, which a number of Gulf War veterans have been diagnosed with.
Yeah, and
which is unfortunate, but at least they have a diagnosis and they can get benefits and they can start some sort of treatment program.
And that's what forced her into the wheelchair. And
mm-hmm.
then another rigmarole she probably went through to get the wheelchair, and then they wouldn't help very quickly with adapting the house. And so her husband, being very handy, did a lot of the adaptations and, you know, paid for that just to make the house livable for her.
Well, yeah, there's a scene in the film where Carol, the VA finally gave her a scooter, which is not an electric wheelchair, but it's a scooter. It's more used for outdoors.
Right.
But she had that. And then her outside doctor said, well, through Medicare, We can get you an electric wheelchair so that when we went to Miami, she had a wheelchair to be able to go through that research project there, because she'd never been able to walk all those hallways to enter into that research study that we filmed there. And the VA said, well, if you're going to get an electric wheelchair, we're going to take back your scooter.
Oh.
And then she got her electric wheelchair within 3 days of ordering from Medicare. She'd waited months, and she had to go through committees to get her scooter. And then the scooter broke down, and nobody could fix it. I wasn't feeling.
Heart. And Carol is just a female example, but it goes on with the males that here she's a female vet, and she tries to stay as active as she can, and limited as she is. And she was having, you know, she felt so embarrassed having to have her young children help her. And the drain on the families, just tremendous. I mean, her husband, Stanley, is just the greatest person I've ever met. He was right there with her, keeping her active and going and helping. And I think she felt worse because of the children that she has that were having to help their mom. And there's no support group at the VA to deal with those things.
And then she was unable to get any support, like home support. It was only recently that she was going through this whole process of appeals and going to the judge with a lawyer that she would be able to get compensation to have home health care. Before that, her children, who were in their teens, were caring for their mom, bathing her. Her husband had to quit his job because she had to have someone with her 24 hours because she sometimes falls and she can't move and can't get up. It's been...
And I remember being in the wheelchair back in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And that was you had the date on top of your brain better than I did.
2002.
Yeah, she was in a wheelchair then and fighting, and she'd had her claim in, and she was fighting, you know, just to get the claim through, much less any other help. And, you know, it was excellent that y'all zeroed in and she opened her house to y'all and that you were able to film everything you did. What was your next step? Where is the film at? Progress us forward.
Okay, well, after we did all the filming, I realized, well, you know, we have to, that which is the hardest part in a documentary, since you don't have a written script beforehand, like if you're making a film with actors, you have to find the story within all of these wonderful interviews, within, you know, hours and hours of shooting at VAs, at research projects. And so it took a lot of work editing-wise. And we finally came up with the main story, for me, is A Search for Answers, which you all were doing as you were going to Capitol Hill, lobbying Congress for research dollars through the research projects. You know, search for answers. Why am I sick? What can be done? Why? How can I get treatment and compensation? So that was discovering that was the main through line. But then again, we started opening up the film talking about the war, because if it hadn't been for the Gulf War in 1991, none of this would be happening. And we do a section on all the I don't have all of them, but for many toxic hazards that you encountered in the Gulf, including depleted uranium and anthrax and oil well fires, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's how we open the film. And then we figure, well, where are we going to get all the footage? Because we're talking about the war. We have to have footage of the war to put in the film. We can't have all these wonderful stories and observations that you made and without any footage. So fortunately, one of the women in the film, Julia Dykeman, she was a captain. She and Carol served in the same naval hospital, fleet hospital in Saudi Arabia during the Gulf War. And she had a high camera, and she filmed about five tapes worth of film. So this was so advantageous to us that we could use her footage in the film. Then later we found out in the here in California, there's a Defense Visual Information Center where during every war, the different services have camera people filming, you know, they're on the ships, they're in the air, they're on the ground, they're filming things, and they, and this center makes all of that footage available for free to the public. You just have to get a clearance through the Department of Defense, and then you have to go out there and you have to say what you're looking for, and they bring you just cases, big cases full of tapes that you have to go through and find what you want. So we found a lot of footage there, which was very helpful, because when you're making a documentary, you want to have footage to illustrate what they're talking about, especially the war, because a lot of people didn't see a lot of footage of the war. There was an embargo on the press filming during the war. They were basically embedded. And so I feel very fortunate to actually have footage from Julia herself, who was actually served there and did the camera. And so that was very helpful.
Yes, they were, if I remember correctly, Fleet Hospital 5. She was a captain in the Navy. That's high ranking.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, I think, in Al Jabal area.
Yeah, they were near Al Jabal. They were near where there was something was a factory or something nearby that was bombed, and they felt that they had some sort of chemical exposure. And it very, very dramatic in the film. Well, Carol talked about this in her first interview about, you know, we went outside and we smelled ammonia in the air, you know. Then 5 hours later, they tell you put your gas mask on, of course. And then she says, after that, I've never smelled anything again. Like, Carol completely lost her sense of smell after that one attack. But then the government denies that there were any kind of, you know, chemicals or biologicals that were in the war theater. So we didn't get into the controversy about what actually caused Gulf War illness and the controversy,
right?
Of them being, we take from the premise that you were ill. In fact, in the film, you talk, this is a real illness. This is a physical illness. It's not stress. It's not in our mind. And we go from there, and what people are doing now, and now people are focusing on the research projects to try to find treatment. Try to find even a marker so the people know that someone has Gulf War illness. Because right now, if somebody can be sick and go to a VA hospital and they say, oh, I have this symptom, I have headaches, you know, I have gastrointestinal, I have this, I have that, the doctors throw up their hands. They don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I have pointed out periodically all through my travels, is that there needs to be a full education, more than what they've done in the past, more than their clinician guide, to keep them updated of what the Research Advisory Committee and the researchers are finding, and making that a mandatory continuing medical education for any of the VA doctors that see Gulf War illness patients.
Mm-hmm.
Or the new title, multi-symptom, multi-unexplained, whatever they tag it with now. But there needs to be an educational process, because our doctors are what the veterans approach. And you said it right. They throw up their hands. They don't know. They, you know, haven't kept up with the researchers and what they're doing. The research when we came home, DOD and VA, were slanted toward the stress, the PTSD, We had to fight to get a compensation bill passed to identify the illnesses. And yes, we've had to fight them because, except for one study that I can say the VA, Dr. Ron Bach, has done on the hypercoagulation problem, I've not really been too impressed. We had the UT Collaborative Center with the Navy CV sample through the efforts of Ross Perot and going to the Chancellor's office at UT Southwest. And here we were going into the third year of a very good program that was touted as Collaborative Center, and they shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it was shortly around that time period that the ones that have been on Congressman Shea's committee that are now, Senator Sanders is a senator now, and he helps us over on the Senate side. We had Dennis Kucinich, who lost his election this year. He didn't get through the primaries because they combined districts, and Marcy Kaptur is a Democratic nominee. So Dennis has been the strong one on the House side to, you know, push for the research to go to the congressionally directed medical research. And we had to fight to get it in there, and we've had to fight each year to maybe get $5 to $10 million. The VA programs were not being effectively managed. I went in, and you would think all the money they had spent that they would have hullabaloo about their meetings and how much money they spent. But I went in looking for any Gulf War illness topic on their research meetings,
mm-hmm.
even on the poster. When they don't have time, they'll put it into a room with a lot of poster presentations with the researchers there to explain what they found. And I went back to, I went back to 06 to their annual meetings, and I was floored. I was floored. Here they've spent all this money and had no presentations at their annual research meeting, not even in the poster sessions. So, you know, it tells me a lot about where their mind has been. And so our job is not done, and the VA cut the research and didn't tell anybody, and we found out about it. So Dennis Kucinich, being our champion, not only got us $10 million for the next round, which is in 2013, but, you know, we grabbed the money that they had cut from the VA research and combined it. Now, all that's up in the air with the Congress, because that was in defense of probes, because that's where the Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program is. So they've done a, you know, the typical thing of extended for 6 months the funding of the appropriations bills that were not approved until after the election. So we have no idea if that's going to throw us behind, if we will get that money that we fought so hard for, or if it'll be cut. And we are, it's taken us from 05 to now to set up the CDMRP annually, and we've had to fight for the money, and to find the researchers that have good projects, and setting up university collaborative studies where we don't just have one university, we have a group of them working together and getting the best that we can get. And it's open worldwide researchers. It's not like the VA research, which you had to be employed as a researcher at the VA at least, it's either 5/8 or 7/8 time. So we really want to find the best out there to get us the answers the fastest. I think Dr. Haley has done good work with the neuroimaging. It's whether we can get the VA to take it to the clinical area now. We have a lot of work being done, Dr. Klimas on biomarkers. We have Dr. Berenick at Georgetown. So it's taking us to this point, and the vets are frustrated, and they want their compensation. They are mm-hmm. falling apart, families falling apart, and, you know, I've told them that was the first thing we went for, and, yeah, it's not being done correctly, and OIF and OEF came in, and so there's more troops coming in the door, putting us behind because they've put them as a priority. And then we had the Agent Orange vets get more preventives, and they got in line before us, even if we had been in the system longer. So the compensation is still a battle. The education of doctors and really educating them, and not just a little manual that I've gone through their manuals, and I'm not impressed. I'm going tape what's going on at the VA rec, have a videotape conference. I mean, civilian chronic fatigue gets set with their connection with the Health and Human Services. We're in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. Should be able to watch it online live. And be able, you know, if you can't do that, at least listen in, which we've had. We've had to listen in, but no comments until the last time when there was time available in Mr. Benz for the first time since they started meeting in 2002, allowed for comments from the phone line. I think we're utterly frustrated. The RAC has been our best supporters. They've been fighting tooth and nail for us. And it's hard. The other vets have not seen that struggle up close and personal of the handful of us that have gone and led the charge and not been paid, but, you know, doing the right thing for our fellow veterans. And even though each of them that are involved are ill ourselves. And so we're still a long ways from there, but I think your film will help. Have you had showings of the film?
I haven't been able in the past few months because I've had an injury to do as much outreach as I would like, but we're starting to get Veterans for Peace groups calling us and stuff like that. And when I get our website changed, I'm going to put out outreach to various groups and things like that, and I've been applying to film festivals and hopefully just to get it out there. I have had a lot of requests through our website for DVDs. I think for the individual Gulf War veterans, especially, you know, a lot of them are isolated. A lot of them live, you know, various places around the country that don't have other Gulf War veterans near them. And I think the first year when we have the DVDs coming out, and when they can get the DVDs, it will be very helpful to them.
Okay, so you are applying to some of the film independent film shows around the country?
Film festivals, yes. And I'd like to do outreach. I'd like to go to to screening for various groups. Now, for instance, you know, every year they used to have the National Gulf War Resource Center conference,
right?
But so much of that is now online on Facebook,
right?
And but I mean, I would love to have a screening, you know, in Washington,
right?
Particularly for people in Congress, people in the VA, influential people, right. And you know, and of course, I would make, you know, DVDs available to people like you and other Gulf War activists to, you know, get the word out.
I think that we can parallel this, and I don't know if you've seen the film, but the Marines that were contaminated by water and environmental factors at Camp Lejeune.
Simplify.
Yeah, Simplify. And they went all over the country with film festivals, had it just out there all over, and they, you know, showed it on the Hill.
Yeah.
They did get their bill through. Basically, I think it's a registry and providing some health assessment, but not, it's a first step type thing. They need to have more than that.
Of course, the thing is that they, that film and The Invisible War, they have a lot of people involved with the film. Our film is just my husband and myself involved. So there's only so much work that we can do for outreach and getting it out there. But if you know of any specific Gulf War illness bill or some sort of thing that would make sense we could use a film to publicize it.
Right. Well,
that would be
my
great.
First thought is it's been, you know, our hearings that we've had on the Hill have concentrated on the Research Advisory Committee and the research. And I know in February I was up there and talking to him about having hearings on Gov4 illness claims. And of course, they're so backlogged, all the hearings have pretty well focused on the backlog and just the bureaucratic mess at the VA. But I, you know, tried to get that word out that we needed a hearing on the claims, which would be starting in the House with the subcommittee on benefits. And then we also needed a hearing focused on the health and the lack of education and the problem with the doctors and how the vets themselves see that. And I feel a tremendous need to do it like we did with Congressman Shays when we finally got the normal veteran and his family to come in. I mean, we had Randy Hebert, we had Mike Donnelly, rest in peace. He's, you know, died of ALS. But we need more than just the research. We need to say, you know, while the research is going on, there is a need here to move these claims forward in a fast track. Mm-hmm. And the problem with the training of the regional offices on getting that done. Then the problem with the doctors again. So I think after the election, when we see what sorts out of who's in control again, the effort will be started again. And that would be an ideal time to have showings in D.C.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that.
I think that Ross Perot was up there one time when I think it was Allison Johnson that had a film. And you know, we've just got to do better with what we have at hand. And your film is something we have at hand that needs to get out there and have the publicity. And I'm going to ask everybody that's listening or listens to the archive tape of this to, again, visit your site and give it again, Chrissy.
Yeah, the site is womenatwarmovie.com. And when you go on the site, there's a contact section. And just send us your information, because when we're getting ready to sell DVDs, when we're having screenings, then we can contact you by email.
Right.
And eventually we'll have a Facebook page up and we can contact you through that.
And, you know, we can brief it that this is the women, but the men are going through the same turmoil of getting care on Gov4 illness. And, you know, we're all in this together, and hopefully any Gov4 veteran out there will take it and say, hey, I can organize this where I'm at, and have y'all come and show the film. If there's a film festival they know that's coming up, to be sure that, you know, the film is slated to be shown. I think that's an ideal time for the veterans and the veterans' family to use this available film and get attention and invite their elected reps.
Mm-hmm.
Invite the regional office people. Invite the VA hospital staff, besides the vets themselves and the families.
Because that's a great idea.
This is how you get the attention. And this is how you raise it up again. And they can help make contacts with the local media to get stories about the film, to get them out to see the film, to write a review on the film. There's a lot of work that can be done using this film as our momentum.
Mm-hmm. That's why one of the reasons that I named, well, I went over why we named it Women at War, because you are still fighting the battles as veterans, but Women at War, Forgotten Veterans of Desert Storm, and that's how I feel, is like when we first started the film, there you were the latest combat veterans in the United States, but since then we've had the war in Afghanistan and the war in Iraq, and they've kind of taken center stage.
Right.
Our film is like a search for answers about Gulf War illness, but I also have themes and subplots in there from discussions that I had with Gulf War veterans about homelessness when they came home from the military, about suicides of veterans, about sexual assault and rape when they were in the military, and those, unfortunately, are too common in today's soldiers, too. I mean, I wish this would be just be historical, you know, the things that they were commenting on, but it's present in the military today,
and
I find unfortunate.
What is, you know, opening minds is that some of the exposures continued on to this current war.
Mm-hmm.
And we are having some of the similar symptoms occur. And, you know, you cannot put it all on PTSD. No way. That's
no.
A psychological damage. And you may have that secondary or primary, but the Gulf War illness is more of a physiological base of damage to the brain from whatever exposure. The biomarkers that we are searching for, and Dr. Klimas is just doing a fantastic work, combining with Dr. I think he's PhD Broderick out of Canada, and putting together the potential biomarkers. So we are getting closer. We do need the hard proof that comes from these research projects that this is real.
Mm-hmm.
And we need, you know, the treatment to be moved along and take a priority. And it's going to be rough. You know, with the deficit the way it is, we're going to need everybody that is listening to this program actively today or on the archive to, you know, go to your website, sign up and say, I'll help. I'm at so-and-so location. I can help. We'll have a film, I'll work it here locally. This is a way everybody can come together, and even though it focuses on women, like I said, we could have done one on the men and had a similar situation. So not getting help from the VA doctors, of having to battle to get compensation, to have to battle to get a wheelchair, to get home health aid, to get the house adapted so they could live with an electric wheelchair. I mean, I'm glad you focused on women. During the Gulf War, I think our percentage was maybe 11% of the force.
Yeah, between 11 and 15.
We've got a little bit more on this current war, and mm-hmm. we've had females die.
Yeah.
So.
But one of the sections that we have in the film is about the women who, and you know anecdotally yourself, women who've had miscarriages, who have had hysterectomies, who've had gynecological problems. I mean, these are specific women's illnesses that nobody's really taking notice of.
No, they aren't. Early on, we had a study. And I never saw it published, but first name was Penny, and I can't think of her last name, but that was years ago, like 94, 95, 96 time period. And since then, we've lost the focus on how many fetal deaths we had and
mm-hmm.
the problems. We're going to be running short of time today, people, but we've got a few minutes to continue on, about 8, before the program's over today. Christy, how much, a rough cost estimate, have you and Dennis invested in doing this project and in doing this film?
I would say thousands and thousands of dollars. That's not counting paying for our time to shoot it and to edit it. But it's been a labor of love because we really believe in the women that we filmed, and we believe in the struggles of the Gulf War veterans. So it's been our honor to do whatever we can.
Well, I just wanted to emphasize that to people, as if they get an idea, they go out and find another independent filmmaker. And they're out there. They are out there, and some of them are looking for projects. And, you know, this takes a labor of love. It takes a commitment to the veterans. And, you know, I remember Gary Knowles' tape, and he sent copies that I distributed on the Hill to every congressman, every senator. I took him 50 a day. My goal was to get 50 of them out a day with a letter and the videotape. And Gary Knowles is the one that helped us set up this radio program with Warrior Connection. And today I've been honored to be the host while Doug Roeke is busy with something else in his life. And he called me short notice, and he had to put this together short notice, but we needed to do this. And hopefully we'll be having more interesting things. We've talked about the suicide rate, and we've just got to do more, people. And even if you're sick, even though you're struggling, there is a role you can play. Family members, extended family members, the public. You can reach out and help us with this project. Help us get this video documentary that has just been a labor of love to be shown in your community, and invite every elected official you can find, every official in the VA. This is a tremendous need. We've suffered for 22 years. We've become more like the Korean War vets of the forgotten. We have been forgotten, but we can change that with everybody's help and everybody doing a little something. And Dennis and Christy have just done tremendous work through many, many years to get this put together and ready to go forward with it. So I want to compliment you and your husband for your family service. You know, Dennis being a veteran, your family members, and for taking on such a large project. And it has been a large one over years. And we move forward by doing these things together. Did a lot of work, and now you're going to need our help to get it further out there and to get the coverage back up on Gulf War illness. We're going into 22 years since the war, and when I review the obits every couple of weeks, it tears my heart up to see young male and female veterans dying in their 40s, in their 50s. I mean, World War II vets, once they got home, they lived a long time. We're still losing them now at a very fast rate, but they're there. And I'm scared that we're going to be gone faster than the atomic vets or the Agent Orange vets. And, you know, it would be nice to have a comparison study of all those. But usually it's like they wait and compensate when they can diagnose an illness like breast cancer or MS. And we've got to do differently. We've got much more tools available in medicine today, and we can get these answers. But we've got to all help each other to get there. And you two have done a tremendous service, and I want to thank you both. And I want to thank Progressive Radio Network for setting up our program and for Gary Knowles' involvement and other independent filmmakers that have come out of our situation and trying to help us. That's what we need in life, is to lift up and expose the problems that don't get the attention by the mainstream media. It takes the independent filmmakers to get the attention. So, Christy, thank you, and thank Dennis for us. That you've done.
I will, and thank you, Denise. You've been there since the beginning, and it was such an honor to work with you during the filming of the, and I look forward to working you as we get this film out.
So, our audience today, we thank you for listening in. We encourage you to spread the word on Facebook, Twitter about this program. It will be archived within a day or two. The archives are up of all the shows we've done. Please get the word out so that we can help inform America. Thank you, and good night.